So we would like to welcome everybody out tonight to the Daniel Town Council meeting, Monday, October 2nd, 2023, at 6:00 p.m. in the Wasatch County Service Building. We'd like to excuse John Blotter tonight. He's asked to be excused, so we'll excuse him. We'll go ahead and get started. We'll go right to agenda item number one, public comment. If we have any public comment, if you'll come up to the pulpit and state your name, and we'll give you a couple of minutes to...
Hi, I'm Margaret Hyatt. I live in Midway. You want an address?
Okay, can you spell your name?
Yes, Margaret, M-A-R-G-A-T-T.
Okay, Margaret.
Hyatt, H-Y-A-T-T. Do you want a physical address?
Nope, that's fine.
Okay. Just had a question on your website. You have a 2026 proposed annexation. Any updates on that would be great to know. How true to the boundary that's shown on your website is, and if there's any discussion about expanding or reducing that. Great. Thank you.
Thank you. Eric, I'm going to turn this over to you since you're the town planner. If you'll address that briefly.
So we have a 20-year plan. It's current, what we have. We haven't looked at expanding that because we're already overlapped with the other municipalities around us. But now we went extra big based on the state law wouldn't let us annex if it wasn't in our 20-year plan. So we have had no requests outside of those boundaries.
Margaret, did you have some special reason for asking that question?
There's a use that's in Heber City now that's in the Industrial 2 section that would like to expand, get additional acreage for that use. So didn't know if that, and I think that gets incorporated into it per that plan that's shown on the website. So the industrial, I think, if I'm wrong on that, the Industrial 2 zoning in Heber gets annexed into the 2026 annexation. Does that ring a bell? Right there behind the airport.
So there's a county portion there behind the airport, mm-hmm. and that can be annexed into Daniel or to Heber City.
Okay. Not the Heber section, but the county section.
The county section.
That makes sense. Okay.
Yeah, you have to get a withdrawal if you're taking it out of a city into another city.
Okay.
Has to go back into the county and then into the next city.
Okay. So you're just annexing a Wasatch County section.
Right.
Gotcha. That makes sense.
But we've only...
That's in our annexation plan, but the property owners would have to request the annexation. It's not like we're going to go do it.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Well, yeah, so far. I mean, there's nothing in the... When the code states, there's nothing in the code that prohibits municipalities from creating a common boundary. So it could be done without property owners applying, but so far that hasn't taken hold.
Okay, thank you.
Okay. Everything answered?
Yes, thanks.
Good. All righty. Thank you guys for answering that. Let's go to agenda item number two. Tonight, Chief Eric James from the Fire District will address us with a presentation. We'll turn the time over to you, Chief.
I'd like to correct, it's Eric Hales.
Oh, Hales.
I typed that incorrectly.
Eric
fat
James.
Finger texting.
I hit the wrong one.
He did, and I was like, Chief Hales.
It's Hales.
It's James.
Sorry
I apologize,
about that.
That was me.
That's my bad.
No, it's not yours.
No, it's all good. Thank you, Mayor and Council, for giving us the opportunity. My name's Eric Hales. I am the fire chief. I did bring Assistant Chief Claire Provost. Her name is Claire, or related to him. I say it every city. But he oversees our EMS system. So what we want to do is take a few minutes tonight and chat with you about what's become known as Proposition 9. And this will be on the ballot in November. So Proposition 9, actually kind of stems from this past legislative session. They went through and made modifications and amendments to, through House Bill 392, to what's known as the Rural Healthcare Facilities Tax. What this allowed, previously, only counties of the fifth and sixth class were eligible to participate in collecting this sales tax. But they did expand that to include third and fourth class counties. We were actually a fourth class county, on the verge of a third class county in the next few years. And it allows us to implement a sales tax for enhancement of rural EMS services. So basically, the administrative change here allows the administrative body of the county council, to place on the ballot and impose a sales tax of up to 1%, according to state law. And it can be used on any sales tax of goods and services that's outlined in state code. So with this, our county has opted to place on the ballot Proposition 9 that will impose a 0.5%, a half a percent sales tax moving forward. So what you will find on the ballot, it will read this: shall Wasatch County, Utah be authorized to impose a 0.5% sales and use tax for the purpose of funding emergency medical services in Wasatch County? So again, it is up to the residents to decide if, whether or not they would like to impose this sales tax. And we'll talk about some of the pros and cons to it, but we're just here to provide you information of what could benefit from this moving forward. So it'll be up to you as the voters. But it's important to point out, with the sales tax, it's not on unprepared food, it's not on fuel, and it's not on medications. So it's on the other goods and services that you would purchase. And this tax is authorized for 10 years. After 10 years, if the county body, the legislative body, deems that, you know, they're receiving enough, they can either do away with it, fund it what we do, or they can authorize it to continue for another 10 years at the same amount that it was approved by the voters. Or if for some reason they had to adjust it higher, they would have to go back to the vote of other people and incorporate that. And feel free to ask any questions as we kind of go through this. So as you are all aware, you've been here at any time, we have seen exponential growth within Wasatch County. During the past decade, 2010 to 2020, Wasatch County grew by nearly 50%. During that time, you were declared the fastest growing county in the state. The KMC Gardner Policy Institute out of the University of Utah has indicated that you will continue to grow at this tremendous rate. You may not always have that trophy of being the fastest growing county, but you will see exponential growth moving forward. And with that growth, impacts the services we provide as a fire district to you. So, as you may be well aware, how is fire and EMS currently funded? Primarily, our operating budget comes from all of you, property tax owners. 80% of our operating budget comes from property tax right now. We do, since 2019, our fire board of directors, the county council, had commissioned a study, an impact fee study, whether or not we should apply impact fees to new growth. So in 2019, we started applying impact fees to new growth on residential and commercial developments. But as you can see, in 2019, we failed to capture that economic growth of that whole previous decade. We are collecting those fees now, and they are helping us. And what those impact fees are for
is for large purchases, like large fire apparatus, which are anywhere from $600,000 to $1 million a piece. Facilities, fire stations, they're very expensive, anywhere from $6 to $8 million to $15 million to build those stations. So those fees collected are, can be used, and they're restricted, can be used for those. We also collect fees for service. In 2020, the Wasatch Fire District absorbed the operation and ownership, essentially from the county, the operation of the ambulance service. That is something Claire had spent, you know, 30 years previously overseeing, and kind of continues to oversee that ambulance service. We also collect fees for plan review fees for new construction permits and inspection fees. We do seek grants. Grants are very beneficial, but they're hard to come by. We seek them both locally, state, and federal grants. But these are usually limited one-time monies for special projects. They can't be used for sustainability and for long-term operations with that. So as we kind of look at how our system is based right now, the Wasatch Fire District has two staff stations 24 hours a day. One is located in the Jordanelle Basin, which is Station 52. And the other one is actually located in Midway City, right across from the city park there. Those are the only two stations that we have that I can actually house personnel 24 hours a day. All the other three stations in the county were built as basically garages that store equipment and don't have any facilities. So during the day, what we actually do is we move some staffing around and actually provide coverage during the day in Heber City so we can get a better response, because that's generally where our calls are generated. This is, you know, our largest municipality. But in this past year, we secured funds in a low interest loan to help build a new fire station. A couple weeks ago, we did a groundbreaking off of 12 South. It actually brings the existing fire station on 100 South and 100 West, essentially to 12 South and 12 East, much closer to your municipality.
So how did you pay for that?
Well, that's a great question. How we pay for that is we actually sought a low interest loan from the Community Impact Board.
You had to bond.
And we had to bond. But it is basically being paid for through impact fees. It's a 30-year low-interest loan to pay for that station and the impact fees we collect. So the goal is that those will be able to sustain that lease payment for the next 30 years.
If growth continues to escalate.
If growth remained the same, we could still pay for that.
Yep. Impact fees are on new construction.
Yeah. But yeah, as the growth. So we're trying not to utilize our operational funds.
How much was it?
The bond? $15 million. To build that station. That station will have facilities to house 8 firefighters. It'll also be our administrative offices, moving those from the Jordanelle Basin, which we've outgrown. And also we'll have a training facility attached to that as well. So it will become our headquarters station. So with that, that'll increase the level of staffing. When that's built, we'll increase our level of staffing here in the basin. Right now we have 5 people. We essentially have 10 people on each day covering 1,200 square miles. You take yesterday, we have a very large accident, the Wallsburg Turn. We have a chimney fire in Red Ledges. And 2 medical calls with 10 people. It just doesn't work. It just doesn't add up to try to deal with all those calls. So we are just actually planning to catch up right now with that. So our ultimate goal is that we'll be able to identify areas, and we have with our strategic plan. We've used our fire advisory board as well as our county board to help us identify where's the growth. Right now, we know, we've identified we need a station at Hideout, And these dates are just, other than the 2024, 2025, beginning of 25, when that station will be complete, the other ones are just kind of, we're guessing, depending on funding. But we need coverage in Hideout. We're also going to need coverage at the south end of Jordanelle, towards Victory Ranch in the new Benlock development. We've also identified with the new Heber annexation to the north, the city actually doubling the size of their city, we may need a station there. And this doesn't leave out that we need additional coverage to our two existing stations in Timber Lakes and Wallsburg that don't have the adequate coverage that they need as well. So with these stations and these proposals, the goal is that we will obviously decrease our response times, we'll increase our ISO rating, our assurance and service office rating, which will in turn lower your property insurance as well. So when it comes to this EMS tax, who pays for this? Purchases, as with all sales tax, because this is a sales tax, will be made by all residents. But it also includes all purchases made by tourists, visitors, and non-residents alike. So right now, the primary burden of funding fire and EMS in this county is on the backs of the property owners. This allows us to shift that burden to all those who utilize it. It is estimated that 30 to 40% of our calls for service on the EMS side are from non-residents. So here we're able to capitalize on that.
So what you're saying is that there will be a commensurate decrease in property tax offset by the half a cent sales tax. Is that what you're saying?
Yes.
So we'll see a decline in our property tax, or just this is going to augment.
This will augment, because again, we have to play catch up. We have to play for these facilities. So we either need to provide all those facilities that I had outlined, we either need to increase property tax, we need to put a general obligation bond out there to pay for facilities, or a combination thereof, or do we utilize this sales tax to offset those costs? Because the beautiful thing about the sales tax is, yes, it is EMS based. I can't buy a fire truck with this money. But what I can do is I can pay for all my personnel. I can pay for facilities, because 70 to 80% of what we do is EMS. So we get to offset those costs with that. So this will allow us to capitalize on the tourism that's coming to this county. Whether we like it or not, this county is trying to draw in tourism. With this new Vita development, used to be known as Mayflower, now it is Deer Valley. Okay, you have gone from zero to a world-class ski resort overnight with the name recognition, and it's going to draw everything. They actually are touting the fact that you can land at an international airport and arrive at a world-class ski resort without hitting one stoplight. Okay, they will not go through Park City anymore. They will be driving down 40, hopping off at Mayflower, and this is a way for us to capitalize. Do you think this resort is going to impact us? My previous life, working on the other side of the county, spent 30 years dealing with tourism and ski resorts. But we got to watch those grow organically, where we get to do this overnight, as soon as this opens.
How will they pay their fair share, if not more, than the cost of putting in those additional response stations up in the Jordanelle Basin? How are we going to capture?
How do you capture it? You capture it with all the sales.
Well, I'm talking about the impacts, the impact fees and all of that. Because even though that sales tax is there, basically they're the ones who are creating the additional impacts on us. And so you're saying that sales tax is going to more than offset the cost of providing the response to it?
It is projected that it will do that, because we'll still collect on all those facilities. One of the biggest one in the middle is the MWR, that's the one being built right now. We've collected impact fees on that. We'll collect impact fees on the other six hotels. But then, and that's the one-time fee, but then we will be able to collect all the sales tax revenue from all the ski ticket sales, all the dining, all the other tourism activities that's generated there.
Will that include hotel tax? I mean, like hotel stays?
It has a piece of it. There is the TRT funds right now, the transient room tax. We are only eligible to receive funds from that as long as we remain a fourth-class county. As soon as we become, for some reason, the legislature has said, if you're a third-class county, you're no longer eligible. But we will get all the other sales tax revenue associated with that. So this is what, historically, as we've looked at the funds, this 0.5% will generate about $5.2 million in the first year to our budget. Our property tax last year was $6.4 million. So this is quite a significant increase. And this revenue will increase, and it has increased every year, and will continue to increase as our population grows, as well as the tourism draw grows throughout our county. So like I had mentioned previously, this is a sales tax for EMS, and I've already mentioned that 70-80% of what we do is EMS. All our folks are cross-trained, both firefighters and EMTs. So all that additional staffing that we bring on helps benefit both of those areas. So it is anticipated that this tax revenue will significantly decrease the need to increase property tax in the foreseeable future and subsequently decrease over time as the growth continues. Yes, ma'am.
You said initially there's three things that the sales tax won't apply to. One was fuel. What were the other two?
Unprepared foods and most groceries.
Medication. The medications, okay, thank you.
And those are kind of outlined in the state tax.
Thank you.
It's kind of much like the TAP tax that was passed here. So what does this mean to my budget? Now, obviously, everyone in this room is different on our finances and different things and what we purchase. So essentially, for every $10 purchase, it's 5 cents placed on that. We take our favorite beverage at our local favorite place, and at about $2.50, that's about a penny what that would be. So that's what impact that would have. The nice thing with this, that if we were to try to increase the revenue that we need, regardless, we need to increase our services. We need to put in stations, because there are people in this county losing property or their home insurance because they're not close enough to a fire station. Absolutely.
We've got a group of homes up the canyon here that have no fire hydrants. So I went to several of those homeowners and I asked them to contact their insurance agent and see if, as a result of no fire hydrants in those neighborhoods, if their fire insurance rates were more than everybody else. I contacted four people. All four of them came back and said no. Insurance companies didn't care whether we had a fire hydrant or not.
Interesting.
So, who is it whose taxes are going up because they are not?
The property tax?
Their property. Who is that?
A lot of people in Tuahay, Hideout, Victory Ranch, any of these people that are designated in the wildland urban interface zone.
Which of these guys are?
$5 to $15 million homes.
Which these guys aren't?
I know.
You're getting there.
Speak for yourself.
What's happening is basically this is bleed over from California.
Of course, we're all paying. I mean, my property taxes went up 55% this year. 55%. And a lot of the people in this community are on fixed income.
100%.
And so we're really taking the hit. And it isn't, yeah, we're all eager to see the tourism and the new faces move in, but I just don't know how we can, how the people who are on fixed income can continue to absorb this kind of a hit. And so I just don't know. I mean,
That's what the beauty of this is that it's discretionary.
I understand, but you're not reducing property taxes as a result of this. You're just going to increase the amount of service delivered. And that becomes a subjective kind of thing. And so I understand.
I don't think you have the ability to decrease property tax. That's a county thing.
Well, it's his budget.
It's our budget.
He submits his budget to the county.
If his taxes just went up 55%, regardless of all of this, did your budget not go up as well? Because I'm paying about that much again as well. Mine got up the last 3 years.
With growth, we collected a fixed amount. It would be interesting for you to look at what you paid the fire district. And most people, it went down to what you paid us.
It didn't in our area, just because of the way the county messed around with values and assessments.
You know, the fact of the matter is, we've got a bunch of very rich people moving in Fort County. And for them, price means nothing. And so basically, now all of our homes are being assessed on people's purchases of starter castles, properties that are just off the scale. But then you look at our homes that are 30, 40, 50 years old, and our values, not the tax rate, the values of the home got reassessed so that now all of our properties are overinflated. And at some point in time, there's just got to be an accounting. You can't continue to just go up, 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 up. I understand the delivery of service. You know, I've been in government my whole life. I understand that. But at some point in time, somebody's got to flip the coin and say, whoa, okay, how much longer can we continue to ride this escalating service delivery program when everybody else is right here? And so I just want to send that message back.
Absolutely.
And I hope, and my final question, and then I'll shut up. What are you going to do if this doesn't pass?
It's a great question. So this year, there's nothing we can do. We've passed the deadline of holding the truth in taxation.
Right.
Next year, we will have to look at either trying to implement this again, or we will have to look at holding our mill levy or increasing it. But that is the last thing that we would ever want to do. Because we know this is, looking at this is a way to actually share that burden for once. To help those, again, 50% of the sales tax generated in this county is from out-of-county people. So if they can help shift that burden, and then we can work on decreasing the amount of property tax,
that won't happen. You know that.
Well,
it's just not going to happen. I know you're saying we'll look to do that, but I have been in government for better than 40 years, and once it gets going, once it's there, it's almost a sacred cow that is going to stay there. And yes, you might find alternatives to fund that. But if you build 4 more fire stations.
In 10 years?
Yes, in 10 years. But
absolutely.
At $15 million a pop, I'm telling you, at some point in time, that's just going to really send a lot of folks in this county someplace else because they just won't be able to afford to live here. So, and I know. I guess I appreciate what you're doing, don't get me wrong. I mean, the the services we provide, especially to the visiting public, many of which don't pay a dime for all of the impacts that they create. I mean, we can go out on a search and spend, what, $50,000, $60,000, $100,000, or a drowning in the reservoir where you bring in submarines to find the body, and that can go up to $250,000. And by golly, nobody gets to share in that burden except for us. And we welcome them, sure. But I begin to wonder sometimes if the economic benefits, that as we open our welcome, and there's nothing going to stop them. I mean, they're coming whether we want them to be here or not. But I hope that there will be some discussion about people who are trying to make it in this county with these incomes, because it just getting harder and harder and harder. And I'll get off my soapbox, but no, we had a bond for a school, we voted it down, and we're going to hell and building a school anyway. And so, I guess if we vote this down somehow, some way, this service is still going to be provided. Somebody's going to pay. We're paying rubber text. And it's going to fall on the shoulders of folks who are trying to make a living here in this county, which is getting harder and harder to do. So, Rob, let me set it up. Claire, go ahead.
I think you bring up some great points. And quite honestly, as we take all of this into consideration, this is a way that we feel that those who are on fixed incomes, because Mrs. Jones that's on a fixed income, I'm very tender-hearted about, but she also probably isn't going to go out to Chick's or the Hub or wherever and buy a meal very often. So this is a way that we feel like is a fair way to capture some of that money that can allow us to continue to provide the service we need.
I agree with you 100%, Claire. If you basically said, as a result of us increasing the sales tax, we're going to decrease the property tax and see where this goes from there. And then maybe we go from half a cent to 1 cent and even further decrease the property tax. That would be a great selling for me. But if you tell me you're going to continue to keep the property tax the same, which I got a 55% increase, and tack on another 5.2 million or whatever that amount is to develop more service, then all it is just more layers of government going up.
Quite honestly, we're caught between a rock and a hard spot.
I hear you. And so are school teachers and the superintendent and everybody else.
But what I'm saying is, when you call for service, be it fire or medical, you expect us to be there.
Yeah.
But in a situation like yesterday,
yep,
the last medical that came in, the chief and myself were on that medical because we had nobody else. And so it's hard when we try to deliver a great service to the community, but yet we don't have the resources to do it. So we just felt like this would be a fair and equitable way to do it without increasing the property tax.
I like what you said, without increasing the property tax. But our fears are we continue to see the property tax continue to go up at alarming rates.
Absolutely.
And we're not making more money.
Yeah.
Okay, I'm sorry.
No, good point.
Any other questions?
I don't have any. Anybody else have any questions?
I think you did a great job. I think this is
Gary's got a question.
Okay. No, I was just going to ask this because I think in some ways our sales tax is lower than down in the valley, and so that actually subsidizes car dealerships and others up here because you save a percent of sales tax by buying up here. So it could impact sales, but you know.
Well, and it could, because on that $100,000 truck you're going to purchase, it's another $500. Most people aren't going to be paying cash for that. It'll just be into their appeal, but this is kind of where we would be. Our friends to the north in Summit County, they are eligible because they fit in that demographic for this. They haven't elected to do this yet, but it is something that their county council is looking at, help subsidize that as well. So this is just kind of how we compare and how we would compare moving forward if that were to pass. Pretty much the entire goal of this is to decrease that financial burden that's primarily on the property owners. As we were to build our budget, as we've projected this, property taxes have gone down as we projected this. But that's just based on if we have sales tax revenue. If we have an economic downturn, property tax is the only thing that's stable. The sales tax isn't. But we want to offset that cost because right now the burden is solely on you. We know that. It's not on the guests and visitors and tourists.
One of the disadvantages of hitching your star to the property, to the sales tax is when there's downturns in the economy and when things get really, really tight, then you'll see a huge decrease in your revenue. And so it's volatile and it escalates and it descends. And so it's a kind of a dual-edged sword that you really, really need to be aware of, because you can see in 2008, when sales tax in this county dropped by 50%, if we were to see a real slide or another depression, basically sales tax is just going to fall off the table. People aren't going to go out and eat. People aren't going to travel. They're not going to come here. But we've still got to provide these services. And so it is a dual-edged sword.
Thank you. I think you've taken a number of your time. If you haven't,
we appreciate it.
Thanks.
All questions.
I'm more than happy to.
You got a tough job.
We do. Absolutely.
Us too.
thank you for your time. Appreciate you coming.
Yes.
Updating this on
this. Before you go, Eric, Rob and I appreciate everything that you said, and they can tell you that I'm on them constantly just about these very issues on that commission. And so I can promise you that these guys, we look at this budget very seriously. They are not doing anything that's irresponsible, and they are going to try to build up a reserve so that when that sales tax drops, we won't be caught flat-footed. But yet, we're not going to build up such a reserve that, you know, we're taking advantage of anyone. And the whole purpose is to try to decrease that property tax, which, by the way, has not really, we did have two minor increases before Chief Hales came aboard.
Well,
I, as a member of this council, I'll just say I'm heartily in favor of this sales tax, and I'm hoping that we can generate enough enthusiasm that it will pass, because this is one way that we can share this burden. And yes, all those people that show up here to recreate that don't pay anything for the service, we still can't say, oh, sorry, you didn't pay, we're not coming. They have to answer every call. I don't have a choice.
Can you bill people for our services? I mean, I go up, climb out the mountains, I fall down and break my leg.
Yeah, we do bill for ambulance transfer services. We do. Those are set by the state. We do not regulate those.
So on top of,
so we get the fees. But I will tell you, as with every insurance company, what is their goal? Not to pay. Or to have some contractual write-off and they just pay pennies on what's billed.
Yeah.
So in a perfect world, yeah, if we collected everything we billed, again, that would help. But our insurance companies are doing everything they can to make a buck. That's fine, yeah. But that's just not feasible for us. That's one of the things Bird and Claire has to work through, is all our collections.
For sure, when we call and we have an emergency, we want you to show up. Everybody does, and they forget that when we have this conversation, but, yeah.
No, this, again, thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Appreciate you being here.
Before we leave that, is the budget online? I'm not familiar with their budgets, I don't know, is it online?
It's supposed to be, but I can't say for sure.
What is that?
Is the budget posted online, on the website?
It's on the website.
It's supposed to be, but like I say, I haven't looked lately.
I'm not familiar with it, so.
Okay, very good, thank you. Let's go to agenda item number three. We're going to have a discussion about our agricultural protection area, and I've asked Gary to lead this discussion for us, so we'll turn some time over to Gary and explain what that is and why we're looking at that.
So I don't have a copy of it here, but if any of you looked at the document that UDOT put out in January on the bypass routes, there was a little addition on there, and I'm not trying to cause problems because, okay, Eric's got it there, because it was not chosen, it's not one of the chosen options, but I think Robin would not like that since it's right in his backyard.
Yeah, that's a stinker. And somebody said they saw this and said, oh yeah, it's going right back against the mountain.
Yep.
Maybe you can turn around so they can kind of, because it's pretty big.
This would bend in kind of parallel right at the base of the mountain here, coming from Provo and right up past Daniel Creek, parallel.
We'll pass it around so you can get it.
And like I said, I'm not trying to cause alarm because that was not chosen.
No.
But it was kind of interesting that, because somebody suggested that they included it, and all of a sudden, and I'm like, where did this come from? I've never seen it before, and maybe I just wasn't paying attention, but usually I would pick out some.
I have never seen it in any, I have religiously looked at every one of those.
Yeah, I've never seen that either.
And one of the things that I was a little bit upset about is, one of the reasons that you would choose that is because it doesn't affect any of Heber City's historical districts or affect their general plan. And I'm like, well, you know.
Or their airport or any.
Yeah, and you've not talked to all those cities, but then they're saying this is outside of our area of interest, and so we don't have to talk to anybody in these other areas.
It's just the flora and fauna and the.
Yeah. And so we've actually created this problem because we haven't filled the property with houses, and so if you were a UDOT planner or anyone else that needed to build a road, where would you put it?
Where there's no houses.
Right through the fields where there's no houses. And so there's some
options. There's no houses in North Fields either, but somehow, some way,
this exact same way that I'm suggesting here.
Yes.
So the state has something called an agricultural protection area, which is an option that we have. The county has an ordinance. I'm trying to figure out how this all works. It looks like there's a county board, but all the decisions are made with the municipality. The county board recommends or for or against, but still I think the municipality can do what they want. We have to say how big one of these areas needs to be.
Could it be the whole entire town?
It could be. The county, I don't know, I haven't found their ordinance yet. I need to call one of their planners and find out where it's at, but I know they just approved one 6 months or so ago. It was 25 acres, so the county's has got to be, you know, 25 acres or less for the minimum. So I'm just bringing this up because I think we ought to explore this. I've talked to a few people around town, and I haven't heard anyone that is not interested.
So what does that
mean? Well, there is somebody. Somebody called the mayor about a complaint about some cows mooing. There was some incessant cow mooing going on, and they could not believe that somebody would be so insensitive.
to allow these cows to move day in and day out.
This is true.
After you're done laughing, did you say, who the heck are you?
Was that because they couldn't hear the dog bark?
We live in the country. That's why we live in the country, don't we? Hear dogs bark, cows moo.
Versus you on the phone, right?
No, I wasn't quite that abrupt.
The reality is,
Did they bring up the peacocks? The peacocks are the problem.
That once a year, you take a mama cow and you separate her baby from her. And that's a traumatic, it's just, it brings tears to my eyes. It makes me have a problem.
It's for incessant mooing.
And those little calves just moo and moo for about 2 days. And they don't stop. And then there's the guy that would have the audacity to bale his hay in the middle of the night. Now that is you. Because he gets a little dew on it. And you know what? That really makes for a nice bale of hay. And several other kinds of things. But I'm just here to tell you that if we don't do something, we're going to continue to see as people move in expecting that this is going to be like it was wherever they moved from. And that their life is just going to be silence and dark. And everything is just going to be wonderful. But in reality, the only way you can protect open space in this county is to farm it. Either that or you just let it go to weeds and dust. Because that's the only thing that will protect good open space and what we enjoy out here in the town of Dayton. So the ironies of this.
So go ahead, Gary.
I'm just saying
what we're talking about.
You can hear mooing cows once a year, or you can hear somebody's music that you don't like every night.
Is that you again?
No, it wasn't.
Okay. So in your packet, there's a summary here of what an agricultural protection area does. Basically says prevents a county, city, or town from enacting a local law, ordinance, or a regulation that would unreasonably restrict a farm structure or a farm practice. It prevents a zoning change on the property without written approval from the landowner. Owner provides a legal defense against nuisance claims if the activity is not in violation of any federal, state, or local law or regulation relating to the alleged nuisance or were conducted according to sound agricultural practices. So I think weaning calves is a sound agricultural practice. So anyway, but it's the next one that I was really more interested in, and it says increased protection from eminent domain. A political subdivision having or exercising eminent domain powers may not condemn for any purpose any land within an agricultural protection area that is being used for agricultural production unless the political subdivision obtains approval according to the procedures and requirements of this section from the applicable legislative body and the Agricultural Advisory Board. So say, for example, someone wanted to come in and use eminent domain to take some property. It would first have to go to the Agricultural Advisory Board, which, from what I understand, is on a county basis. And they would make a recommendation, but then it would come back to the town. And it doesn't matter what the board recommended, the town can say yes or no.
That's why that map is significant.
It really hasn't been tested with UDOT from what I've seen, but it definitely makes their life a lot harder. And so I personally would like to make their life a lot more difficult when they're talking about putting roads through the town.
Without consulting us.
Yeah. So, and I don't think Robin would enjoy that four-lane highway in his backyard, but you couldn't hear the cabs going.
No, that's for sure. You wouldn't be able to hear anything.
So planning's kind of been looking at that, and I just wanted to bring it to see if there was support from the council, because the council is going to have to do some things. We may have to consult legal. I don't know whether the town needs to have their own ordinance or whether we do what the counties is. I found Utah counties, and Utah County basically took the state's ordinance and just localized it with a little bit of language. Do we have to do that?
But it covers their whole footprint? It provides?
No, I think it covers what is in Utah County. And that's my question here. I don't know whether it covers everyone in the county or whether we have to have our own.
before we put a lot of work into this, I just thought I'd see we have support. To actually create the agricultural protection area, the residents have to apply. And so they apply, it goes to this county advisory board, they come back with a recommendation, or they have 45 days. If they don't come back in 45 days, then it's assumed passed, and then it comes to the town. Town has 45 days to do something with it. If they don't do something with it, then it's passed. And they have to hold public hearings and those kinds of things. And then the other thing is they put an attachment on the deeds of properties within 300 feet of the agricultural protection area that warns owners that agricultural uses have the highest priority use status. So that can happen. I mean, when you get the cow complaint, they say, sorry, you were warned, it's on your deed. And it doesn't matter whether that's in the town or out of the town.
So maybe that it's each property owner has to take care of with the county to do that, or does the town have to do something?
No, each property owner has to, property owners have to get together and apply to the town for an agricultural protection area. And so, you know, we'd have to get a group of people together, which is a good thing, because we can find out what, you know, the people in the town would like to do, what areas make sense. And I think that's part of, you know, if the town has an ordinance to say what makes sense. You know, how big it has to be. It also makes it so that zoning can't be changed for 20 years. It doesn't stop you from doing anything that the zone allows now. Anyone can detach themselves from the agricultural protection area at any time. If they decide for some reason they don't like it, that doesn't mean that they'd probably still be a spot zone and they couldn't be rezoned. But, you know, there's some ramifications that way, but I think the benefits far outweigh that. And I think if we look at our town map, there's some areas that make a lot of sense, and, you know, it could actually, maybe the whole town makes sense. Actually, the whole town couldn't be, because it has to be a zone where agricultural use is permitted. So it could not be like the industrial.
Which might be easier to point out those areas where it doesn't make sense than it is maybe to go in a spot. Property owner.
Do you want me to see if I have my map in my car?
No, I think that's fine.
Okay.
I don't know. Because the property owners are going to have to get together and apply.
Exactly. But they should do that probably in groups instead of having 50 or 70 property owners coming in. And
you can, after the fact, attach a property to that. And then every 20 years it comes up for review and it can be either reestablished or it goes away. So I guess I would just ask, you know, is there anyone on the council that has concerns if planning moves forward with this? I mean, it's really, like I said, we're just kind of throwing out this idea, and it's still going to have to be the residents that get together and apply. But we want to make it so it's possible if they do want to apply. And since it's really going to depend on the council, I just thought before we put a lot of work, we should, you know, we'd like to ask.
Well, my opinion is that our general plan wants us to do this. That's how I see this.
Okay.
And I think if you would pursue this, I would be appreciative. The county is continuing to get applications to be protected by this out in the Northfields. So I don't know if it makes sense for the whole town, but for big portions of it, yes, I would think so. The only caveat I might have would be, what if the town itself needed to exercise in the domain at some point? I'm not sure what we would, unless we were going to build a building or, you know, something like that. Would that be a problem at that point?
It would have to go to the advisory board. They would make a recommendation, and the town would have to.
Like you say, that would be my biggest.
So the town still has control over it. It comes back to the council for the final decision.
So there's, I mean...
So we can't protect ourselves from ourselves, but we can maybe protect ourselves from some of the other areas.
And there would be, as it says here, I mean, this discussion would be in the Planning Commission as well as we would have to set a public hearing, discuss this publicly with that. So I'm all for it. I think it's wise that we look at this and at least get this started in the right direction for individual landowners and town thing. So I would think.
More options are better than no options.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, so we'll continue with that. The other two things that Kim kindly put in your packet are some other things that planning's working on that just wanted to make you aware of. One of them is the water efficiency standards from Central Utah Water. So we have, can't remember who it was on planning that volunteered to look at that, to look at the code. It wasn't Pam, I know that. And see what changes we perhaps should make to that and get those ready for next month.
Is this the one that Eric says we need to adopt if we're going to be able to apply for those grants?
Yes.
Well, reading through this, does this even apply to us?
A lot of places it doesn't, but if we don't have this in place, we don't.
But we don't require landscaping. We don't have...
No.
Right.
Commercial zones.
So it won't affect you.
We do have some stuff, and that's what we need to look at our code and make sure that it complies. So we're working on that.
Well, it's scary when you're reading through this, you know, if we were to have to enforce something like this, because it's not enforceable for us.
Well,
put the requirements out there, then all it does is you have the ordinance and that's a check. Yeah, we got it right here. Yeah. If it doesn't apply, it doesn't apply.
And it doesn't apply to anything that's already there. It only applies to new construction. So, yeah, reading through it, it really doesn't affect us. It might a little bit in the commercial area. We don't have parking strips. We don't have a lot of these things. So we're going to try and make that so that it's part of our code so that we can qualify for grants and because we'd like to save water, but we have to also make sure that we don't cause more problems than we solve here, so
For instance, drip irrigation or bubblers shall be used except in lawn areas. Drip irrigation systems shall be equipped with a regulator, filter, flush end assembly, and any other appropriate components. I mean, it just gets into the nitty gritty of...
But if you have a drip irrigation system, you already have a filter, or you don't have a drip irrigation system.
Agreed, but are we going to require it? That's what I'm saying.
Like I said, if it was affordable, I'd have drip irrigation in my alfalfa field. It'd be 18 inches underground.
But this doesn't apply to irrigation water, right? This is just...
It's irrigation. It's landscape standards.
Okay.
You're trying to conservation.
Okay.
But not... There's nothing in here that applies to your alfalfa field out in the back.
No, it's all just landscaping, yards and things.
Yeah.
Anyway, I'd want to read through this really carefully and make sure that we don't have to start enforcing some of these things.
Right.
At least 3 or 4 inches of mulch shall be used, shall, not may, but shall be used in planting beds to control weeds and improve the appearance of landscaping. Well, I'm guilty of not doing that. I've got weeds everywhere, so.
Horse manure is mulch.
Again, it won't affect you. It will affect the new construction.
But anyway,
rather we don't do anything?
We do want grants if we're eligible for them. So, yeah, I think we should look at it. But again, if John Blotter were here, he'd be saying what I'm saying. He's always, I don't want to get into that.
So I guess we have to decide what piece of it do we need.
I think we have to
in
adopt
our
the whole thing.
Have to
adopt the whole thing.
So we can get a grant. The only reason we're looking at it is...
No, it's applicable to us. That's just their guidance.
Right. Okay. And there are some standards in our code, especially in the commercial areas. And And so that's what we're going to look at, is where we have code that, there, are we in compliance? Can we make a small tweak to become, you know, come into compliance? Or just, what do we need to do? So we're trying to figure that out and get that ready for next month. And then the other thing that's in there, is there's just a note that's a portion of a opinion from the Office of the Property Rights on Budget. What it's talking about is a reasonable method of approving unrecorded or illegitimate land divisions. So, non-conforming or illegal subdivisions, I guess. That's not non-conforming lots, those are already covered. So, we're just looking at that. This is just kind of one of the documents we're looking at as a guideline of where should we go. So, anyway, that's just kind of an update of what the planning is up to now.
Gary, I appreciate everything that the Planning Commission is doing. I've asked you guys to look at a lot of things. A lot more things to come and ask you to look at. So, this is just the beginning of some of the code and some of the ordinances and stuff that we're looking at. Glad we have a Planning Commission. We've got a lot of good people in there helping us. And like you say, all this has to go to public hearings and be decided on by the public too. But we do want you to know that we are looking at things and trying to improve things and see what's going to be the best for the town of Daniel as we move forward. So appreciate all that you guys do, Planning Commission.
And I would love any feedback that anybody has, you know, as they think about it. We'll keep looking at it.
I do need to know if you would like to have a motion to set a public hearing about these issues, because the way the calendar worked, I actually had to put that notice in today, so then I'll have to, or we couldn't have a public hearing at the Planning Commission, so I'll have to have a retraction printed. If you don't want to have a public hearing at the Planning Commission for recommendations, and then also if we want to have that as our public hearings for November, because we
other than the code changes which we talked about the hearing, we're not going to be ready for a public hearing on this stuff next month.
Okay.
Okay.
So we do have to have one for the code changes, and I think we already said that, didn't we?
Well, that was part of it. So what it said was the code changes to Title III and Title V, which are the definitions of Title VIII, so that includes your Board of Appeals and some other things, and then also the definition of the planner and whatnot. So that's in there. And I can print a retraction, it's not a problem.
That's fine. But I'm saying as far as ag protection areas.
Okay. And I did put that in
that
there.
That stuff, yeah, that we are ready to talk about.
So retract that portion.
Go ahead and retract that. Okay, and then let's see. Oh, and then also possible change to policy and procedures about the ag building fees. So that's what's in. And again, I had to have that in today
that
at noon, or I couldn't do it.
Yeah.
So we can talk after and tell me what you want taken off that public hearing.
Okay, because I haven't seen it, but yeah, just
okay.
We don't want to dock ag protection zones yet or areas yet.
Okay.
You think it's too soon? Because I think the people that are coming to talk about the code will.
Well,
be on that same page.
And my thought was we would have a public hearing, because that's just a recommendation for the county, and that gives the public two opportunities to discuss this, what you're sending to the council.
But what we don't know what we're sending.
We don't know.
But that's what I'm saying.
I'm saying
that
we're not ready
yet. Okay.
But you could take public comment.
That's what I'm saying. Then there's public comment about
and you know if you have
how they feel about it.
Without
I was told for things like that you wanted two public hearings. You wanted one in the in the planning commission, and you wanted one in the town council.
We could take comments, but then we'd have to have another public hearing before we could do anything.
Well, but we would. We would have it in the town council.
So I just, let's look at it and see how much we've got, because
Okay.
public hearings can be very short or very long, and
There's a long stump, right?
Yeah, and it was just the way the calendar went. If I didn't have it in for Wednesday, then it couldn't be.
Yeah, and I don't, the code changes, we have a deadline. The ag protection areas and the other things, we don't have a deadline.
Okay.
And so we'll
And then I can even put an amendment rather than a retraction, that these will just be discussed with no action taken. So we can talk about that.
So just quickly before you leave, the October 12th Planning Commission meeting at the county. Item 6 is consideration and possible recommendation regarding ordinance 2314, amending Wasatch County Code 160504 and 1627 for the purpose of creating the ability for farm preservation subdivisions to potentially include the P160 zone property as part of the required preservation parcel, and to amend the preservation area required to be determined on the number of lots proposed in the subdivision. And if this, if forwarded, the recommendation of the Planning Commission will be considered by the County Council October 18th. So it's moving very fast.
But that's a totally different thing.
Yeah, well, and with that is item number 8 in the same meeting.
Okay.
Is consideration and possible recommendation regarding ordinance 2315, amending Title 16, adding applicable definitions, adding language regarding conservation subdivisions. So this is the grouping of lots on a big parcel.
Yeah.
And so that's right in line with what we're talking about with these.
It is, but they're both two different
things. They are
things.
Different.
They're different things.
They are separate programs.
Yeah.
Yeah. But the same language will be included in what they're doing with their conservation.
Yeah.
And we have that ability right now. We have farm preservation in our code right now. You can do a 20-acre parcel and cluster down in the corner, but there's a time frame that has to remain. I believe that's 20 years, has to remain like that.
It's clustering.
Yeah.
Not necessarily farm preservation, but I mean, that's the outcome.
Yeah.
It's,
right.
It's clustering to where you can build everything in one area and preserve.
Right.
But farm preservation is, I think, just we're protecting the rights of individuals to continue to do animal husbandry and farming and those kinds of things.
Yeah.
Whether it's noise or smell or whatever the case may be, that basically is how our whole town was built on. I mean, everybody that lived here farmed.
But the ag protection area lets a group of people say, this is what we want for our area.
Yeah.
You know, we want to protect this.
But it doesn't allow them to just willingly go cluster down.
It doesn't change the zoning.
It doesn't change the zoning.
It stops them from changing the zoning, but you can still do whatever you could do in the zone before.
Right.
So.
Well, it stops UDOT coming through the back door.
I don't know if it stops them, but it slows them down.
It slows them down.
Correct.
Okay. Make some pause.
Yeah. So, realistically, we've talked about agenda item number 3 and agenda item number 4. And with the discussion that we've had here, we're going to look at what we put into the paper today as public hearings, or last week, and we may...
It'll be on Wednesday.
It'll be fixed.
Okay.
After we leave this meeting, based on the discussion that we have,
okay.
that we've had, and that Gary and we decide to later.
Okay.
So that'll take care of agenda item 3 and 4.
But I think on number 4, we would want to go ahead and set a November public hearing for town council to consider the changes that the planning commission is going to recommend. Is that correct, Gary?
Correct.
Okay.
So we would want to go ahead and schedule a November meeting.
Okay.
Yeah, you've got to do that if you're going to make any changes.
Okay. So we'll go ahead.
So that'll take care of 4.
Okay, so do you want me to wait to put that in the paper, which will be fine, because it's not a problem to wait till after Planning Commission to do it. So wait for their recommendation so I can be more specific?
Yep.
Okay.
And then we can post that as a public hearing for that, for the next town council meeting in November.
Does that have to be made as a motion, or can you just?
Let's go ahead and do a motion.
Okay, I'll call for a motion.
I would move that we schedule a public hearing at our November meeting, town council meeting.
I believe it's the 6th.
What is it?
The 6th of November.
The 6th?
6th.
Sixth.
Yes.
The 6th of November, to discuss and take public comment for the updates to the town code that will be recommended by the Planning Commission.
Do I have a second?
I'll second that.
Okay. Call for a vote?
Duggan, yes.
Kohler, yes.
Hickson, yes.
Pearson, yes.
Okay, thank you. Let's go to agenda item number 5. Storm Haven Water System Improvement and Grant Funding Discussion. I'm going to put a little bit of pressure on Kim right here and have her just update us on where we're at on that right now.
So unfortunately, we were supposed to meet a couple of Fridays ago, and Nancy O'Toole, who's helping us for MAG, found out that the grant that we were really gung-ho about, for some reason we didn't qualify for the 90-10 match. It was going to be 50-50. So she's looking for some other grants, supplemental grants. And in the meantime, the BRIC grant, which is what we originally applied for, which is through FEMA, we didn't have everything, because that's a competitive federal grant, so we needed to have all our ducks in a row. We were not there yet, so they gave us an opportunity to apply for technical assistance. And so I actually moved heaven and earth trying to get us all together for a meeting on that same day that we were going to meet to talk about the grant that kind of fell through, and then that fell through. So we're all meeting on October 13th. There will be 3 people from MAG, and Ryan, Amelia, myself, Eric, the mayor. We could have, I guess, one other person if somebody.
John Blotter did tell me tonight.
He wanted
when
to
I
come. Okay, because unless
there
we want
was that, he wanted to be there.
Otherwise, we'd have to make it a public meeting. But they'll all be there from 9 to 10 a.m. at Ardura to talk about this BRIC grant, the technical assistance to make sure we do that. And then while we're all there, Nancy feels like she can be able to update us on what she's found as far as other funding. So it should be a good meeting. And that's generally our... And you're invited as well, because that's generally if you want to come to that part of it.
Well, I just volunteered with some technical assistance, so if you're still going to need that, I can be there.
Okay, and then we'll just have our staff meeting after that. That's our general, because it's the 13th, which is the Friday before our Planning Commission meeting, which is when we all meet for staff meeting anyway. So that's the update. I wish I had better news. We are working with Janelle Braithwaite from Rural Water to get her all the information that she needs to compile. I guess she turns it kind of into a spreadsheet so that we can look at what water increases. So what $1 does this year or every year, or if we do $5 this year and then we don't do it for 5 years. Anyway, it's something that we can manipulate. So she had some conferences in between when she was here last month but we should be able to have that probably by the Planning Commission meeting and certainly by the next town council meeting. I don't know if you want to put that on the agenda for the next town council meeting as far as an increase, because wouldn't we have to have an ordinance for that?
We have a public hearing and everything before we do that.
We just
It's just a resolution.
That's just a resolution? Okay. Okay. There's just a lot going on in November, so I didn't know if you wanted to add that on to November as well, and just because it's going to be a big public hearing and kind of, you know, everything we're looking at, or you wanted to move that back to December?
My opinion is you would want to have a lot of discussion before we have a resolution.
Yeah.
Okay.
You probably want to get the tool and play with it and see what your options are.
We'd have to work on
okay,
this
okay.
quite a while.
Well, we could at least begin the discussion mm-hmm. then and hopefully have the tool, but we can look at that. There's just a lot going on in November and kind of adding one more, like, really big piece I wondered about, so. But that's where we're at. So everybody is firing on all cylinders, and MAG is very engaged with us. Like I said, we have three people from MAG that are helping us at this point, so I've been really happy about that. And the gal from the state, her name's Debbie Worthen, is having two people from the state talk to us as well. I guess they, Eric Martineau, I think, is over the project in Hull, and then a potential, they contract out. It doesn't cost us anything. They contract out with the technical support, and I think she's hoping to bring that person online. So it is coming together, but it is kind of like herding cats a little bit.
It takes a lot.
It does.
So that pretty much well is our update on the our grant funding. And also, she included in that item number 6, which is the water rate and impact hookup fee discussion, because we don't know how that's going to work until we have this meeting and get that all looked at. And so 5 and 6 are basically compiled in what we just talked about. Are there any questions or any comments about that? Okay. So we'll go to agenda item number 7 then, council reports and updates. We'll just start right down there with Robin.
I sent you an email.
Yep.
I've been getting a lot of comments and concerns about potholes. And if you drive those roads every day, like Mayor and I do, then you everybody else, but sometimes you guys that live on the other side of town don't get those complaints. But bottom line is, I believe that the state used to set October 10th as a guideline when asphalt would not be laid beyond that point in time, and I just don't know. I don't know whether that means for potholes or whether that's full-fledged overlays or whatever, but I think we are bumping up against any kind of a reasonable, logical deadline, because when you put asphalt down and it's not warm enough, that all you do is just throw good money after bad. So
I actually think that the town of Daniel has a deadline on that also, don't we? 15th of October is the town's deadline.
Yeah. Are there specific potholes that you've received complaints about?
Yes. Drive up a little Sweden and you'll see like 50 of them.
There's the biggest one that I think is probably one of the bigger problems is up on Mill Road.
Yeah.
And there's a sizable hole right there. Just so you know, and I'll just kind of update on this. I don't want to take over your report. So during the day of service, Joe Witt called me the night before, and they were pouring some blacktop down on Southfield Road, and they had some extra blacktop, and so on Big Hollow Road and a couple of places, they went and cut some blacktop out and replaced some blacktop. I've looked at some of the repairs that they've made, and they did a great job, and that was included in the day of service that we had a month or so ago.
You know, and he threw some mulch in other potholes that
yeah.
we had around, just out of the goodness of his heart.
He did. And so we are aware of this. We also, we know that
winter's brutal on roads. We also know that our road funds are, usually takes us about 3 years to save our road tax funds to really do a meaningful project. Doesn't mean we shouldn't patch a few potholes. I've talked to Joe Witt about that, and he's got another pour of blacktop coming up here in a week or so, and he's ordered a little bit, or told me that he would order a little bit extra, and we would look at a few other holes to just patch for, to get us through the winter. And then the first part of the year next year, after we get through this winter, we will bid out. I'll get Ryan Taylor and myself, and we'll drive around to Danieltown, and we'll paint and mark holes, and then we'll get a couple of bids to get the rest of these fixed. Now, along with that, Joe was talking a little bit about, on some of the asphalt, you drop off the asphalt a little bit. He wanted to maybe get a few loads of gravel and kind of level that out. And I told Joe that, you know, we would have him submit a bid on what that was going to take to do that, and bring it to the council and make that decision. Not just the mayor saying, yeah, go ahead and do this, but we're aware that definitely there's things that need fixed around the town. We know that, and we're working on that. So,
well, I knew that, and so I brought it up so that you have an opportunity to bring us up to speed.
Thank you.
There was a comment back here.
I showed a few of you gentlemen on the day of service that we have a very large, what is it, a sinkhole? It's on the corner of Haven Estates and Cove Lane, and I feel like it's very dangerous if the snowplow were to hit it this year with how far down it's gone. So I think I showed the mayor, and did I show you, Eric? Yeah. So just, that's one more.
It was a depression when you showed me. Has it turned into a sinkhole?
Well, I mean, when you hit it going 20, it feels like a sinkhole.
Well, you need to slow down.
It's a little,
or speed up.
15, sorry. 10.
Yeah, sometimes if you're doing 70, you don't feel them at all.
Actually, it's to the point now where the locals there, we don't go over the dip, we go around it.
If you hit that one at 70, you'll be up in the oak brush.
You'll be up in,
you missed the turn
in the rock quarry. So I just, sorry, I should have brought it up in the public comment.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
That's all.
Anything else, Rob?
That's it.
Barry?
I don't have anything for you.
Okay. Thank you. Really, the only thing that I have, and I may comment on anything Mary says too, because I'd like to hear myself talk. But so we did get the RV moved. Everybody
can see.
The day, about a week after they moved that, they started piling up mattresses and everything else. And so I did have a conversation with the owner of the trailer court. We did get the mattresses moved. We do know that, you know, garbage is to be hauled off, not stacked up the side of the road. And so I laugh because it wasn't 5 days after they moved that RV that it was piled back up. So I was a little upset. They took my second home when that went. I didn't have a sleeping bag in that when Stacy got mad.
Was your bad cave?
If you had waited one more day, you'd have mattresses.
But other than that, I'm pretty much. That's all I have to report, so we'll go to Mary.
I was gone most of September, so I didn't get an opportunity to go to other meetings and things, but I did want the council to know that I, as a member of the Fire Advisory Commission, I've been asked to serve on a committee that will promote the sales tax that Chief Hales was discussing with us tonight. You realize that the agency that will benefit from a sales tax is not allowed to advocate for its own purposes. And so we're forming a committee that will do that, put up signs and, you know, advertise and that kind of thing. So I just wanted the council to be aware that I have been asked to serve in that capacity, and I can do that either as a council person or a single individual, based on what the guidance is here.
While we're talking about this, and I'm sorry I didn't bring it up earlier, I would like to see consideration, reconsideration about where we're going to put the firehouse. It seems like the south end of this valley is woefully absent. We're treating all the folks that are building glorious homes up in the Jordanelle Basin, brand new fire stations.
Actually, the one on 1200 South, that's pretty close. That's the one they were talking about.
That's the big one.
It's right by the Sinclair Station.
It's what?
By the Sinclair Station.
By Mountain Point.
That one, so that one is actually.
I almost wish that they'd consider something a little further to the south, but.
Well, I will tell you that Chief Giles was the one who purchased that property. He looked at everything that was available. And I would have preferred not that location because of the traffic that's at that intersection. But it is very well located to the hospital and to a lot of other, you know, that intersection goes a lot of different directions. But the traffic there is a nightmare, Andrew. They actually respond to quite a few accidents at that intersection. They'll be right there, yeah.
Just walk outside.
I did want you to know that I'm going to be doing that, and so you may see my name in the paper, letters to the editor. But again, I can do this as just an individual, but people do know that I represent the town as well. So that's all I have.
Thank you. So I want to go back just for one more thing I just remembered. So, and Kim will correct me if I'm wrong on this, but we have had Joan Gladowski call and pull out of the election. So he is asked to not run for a council seat. So we're down to two council members, which will mean that we won't have to have, you correct me, we won't need a primary or anything else.
No,
there'll be
no.
Two people on the ballot. And so there's two seats available. We have two people that are running. And so you'll still get a ballot to vote, but there's.
I actually spoke to Joey Granger today. John, she was able to take him off the ballot. She's not sure if it's too late for us to cancel the election altogether, but it's basically a non-election, even if it's an election. And she's doing elections for the entire county, and there are several, some are doing the ranked choice filing, so she's juggling a lot, but we're going to talk later this week. So there will either be nobody on the ballot, and it will just be those two that, you know,
that applied.
That applied and turned in their candidacy.
Yep.
You know, they still have to turn in their financial documents, but neither one of them has spent a dime on this, but that's a requirement. So unless one of them didn't follow through on that, then it will be Gary Walton and Matt McMillan.
Okay.
If it's not too late to cancel, though, it would be good to do that.
No, and I hope so too. She wasn't sure because they changed something in the state code, and she wanted to do some research on that. She said, "Kim, I don't dare just tell you off the top of my head because I've got ranked choice filing in my head, and I have the other one in my head." And
you may have to contact the.
The gal's name is Shelley. From the state.
Yeah, you may have to contact and actually send.
But we're not the only ones. Wallsburg is having the same issue. So but it was funny. Joey knew about John. She goes, "Well, I knew that he was moving, so I just wondered when you were contacting me." I said, "He just came in here yesterday. It's so funny that you called me today." So
anyway, that I just wanted to update you on that, Kim. Thank you for that. We're going to bypass the engineering reports tonight. I talked to both Ryan and Amelia and excused them tonight. They had other commitments. Let's go to the planning report. Planning report's there in front of you. You got time to look at that, or had time to look at it. Any questions? Eric, do you need any time right here for this? You want to discuss anything?
Nope. Unless you guys have questions.
So we've seen some of the permits and stuff starting to build again. There's quite a bit going on in town, really. So everybody that's on here is pretty much well underway, other than Vault Pro. They are screening some dirt and some stuff there, but everything else is pretty much well moving along, so. Any questions for the planner? Okay, let's go to item number 10. Daniel Municipal Water, Storm Haven Water, updates. Eric, anything you want to update us on as far as what's going on?
We do have a leak on Tammy Lane, and we've called the excavator. We're on his schedule now. The plumber's done his assessment, and so we're waiting on the excavator. The blue stakes are called in, so as soon as we know that, we'll try and make notice to the customers that they'll be down for 6 hours. It's on the main line, so it'll take a little while.
Yeah. I talked to the plumber this morning. He called me about 7:30, and because I had called him yesterday, and he wanted to know what I was calling him for. So, yeah, we're working on that. We'll try to get that taken care of as soon as we can. We've got a pump in there that's, it's been pumped out a couple times.
Yeah.
It's, so we're working on that. We're aware of that. Any other questions about Daniel Water or Storm Haven Water? Any concerns? Other than the ones we've got?
We'll be driving around Friday also, programming meters with Cora May.
Okay.
Also, so you'll see us around town Friday.
Sweet. All righty, thank you. I did talk to Shelley today, and I talked to her about a couple things. We got the meter replaced on the school finally.
Yep.
And that was just not reading, that was burned out, and we went ahead and fixed that. And that's been taken care of now, so.
That'll be one of the ones we're programming for.
Yep, so that'll be up and where we can read it and everything now and go from there.
Okay. Eric, where do we stand on heat system for our well house? Remember we had the issue, have we got a more permanent solution than temporary heaters, or have we gone, can you give us an update there?
Yeah, we've looked at the heaters in the system. Nothing's been purchased yet. So we're looking at replacing the main heater in the building. I know somebody thought we could repair that, but at this point, I think there's just too much at stake not to just replace that. And it, of course, it's an industrial heater, so.
So that's in the pipeline?
It is.
And then, Kim, have we ever submitted anything to Utah Local Government's Trust on the damage that occurred to our chlorinator? And do we have any
I have,
news
I,
back from them?
No, I have instructions on what to do. That's as far as I'm at, but I think part of maybe what I'll need is a bid on replacement too, do you think?
Yeah.
So,
but certainly,
we're working on that, but I've been in contact with them, and they have actually, we're working with them on a couple different fronts. They're helping us with our litigation as well, and so I'm actually in contact with them more in the last few months than I ever have been, so. Eric and I can work on that, getting that together. And they encouraged us anytime that there is any kind of a glitch in either system to go ahead and submit it, that not to worry about our rates being raised. It's not like auto insurance where you're afraid to turn something in. So. Yeah, anyway, so.
We spent so much money doing that repair.
Okay.
That's why you have insurance.
Okay. I'll put that on my agenda, and we can talk about it in our staff meeting.
Okay.
Okay, let's go to agenda item 11, Recorder's Office Warrants Approval and Announcements.
Everything is pretty straightforward. Smith Harbickson is still working in conjunction, or I don't want to say supervising, looking over what they're doing with the trust on our two issues that we're in litigation with. However, there was a bit of a credit, not a huge credit, a couple hundred dollars, that actually went to our retainer that I didn't notice had been put in our retainer, so we had a little bit of a credit. So there has been work done this last month, but so far we didn't owe them very much, and they're doing very little. They're looking, they're not creating any documents or anything. They're just looking over documents once they're created, making recommendations, sending it back. They're not filing anything. They're not doing anything like that.
I talked to Katie about weekly. I also talked to Matt Church. I haven't had an update for about 10 days on the litigation that we're in, but I'm expecting a phone call from him this week with an update, so I'll be able to update you on those next time we meet. So.
Okay, then we have switched the engineering is now, so we're back on track with engineering. They switched to mid-month, so we're always going to be a little bit behind, but we're back on track with that. So the Executech, that's the monthly licenses still, but I would very much like to just completely switch over to Ace Computers. And I put on here the $200, that's why I included the email that he sent to Scott and I to make sure that everybody's okay with the plan that we thought was okay or was the best plan. So there will be a couple one-time charges. He has Eric's computer. We haven't paid him anything yet, and he's gotten my computer and my printer and my scanner working. He's got Eric's computer done. We still have to completely switch over my one computer to my new computer, but I had to learn a whole new Windows, so that's been, you don't feel like you're old till you're learning new software, and then you feel really old. But just on what he's done for us and what I see us needing, I think this option one, that's $200, because it includes 1 hour of on-site and 4 hours of remote. I think that's plenty for our needs, and we don't have any break fix. We know we're good. That'll cover Eric's laptop, Shelley's laptop, my laptop, the desktop, any of our computers, or if there's something that needs to be done on anybody's tablets. And I really don't see us needing more than one, and that's the one he recommended. Yeah. So I just wanted to make sure, but I did feel like we needed to pay him something. So I put that on the warrants, if that's okay, to go ahead and just
tell him to send us
get
a
that
bill.
Service. Okay. Right. Yeah, well, okay. And I'll have him invoices, but can we go ahead and move all the Microsoft? Because once we move those over, then we're done with Executech. So it's kind of we're severing ties. So go ahead and do it. Okay. Okay, so that's what that was.
I just had a question, if I can.
Yeah.
So who's hosting our email? I mean, it's Microsoft. Is that going to
It will all migrate.
Okay.
And it doesn't affect our website or anything like that, because Chris Anderson does our website.
Yeah, I knew that, but I just didn't know
No. What
our deal was with the other company, whether we were going to have to start over again with email.
No, and honestly, they keep raising, they put on another, and they couldn't explain to me why they put on another license for it. So I would just much rather have it be local and deal with it.
I just want to make sure.
Everything should go seamlessly. And that'll be part of that one-time fee, is him moving everything over seamlessly. Okay, then I think everything else, a lot of blue stakes because we've got a lot going on. let's see, there's in, oh, so there's two meter things under Daniel Municipal and then one under Storm Haven. So they're meter, MMI, meter maintenance, that's a mouthful. That was for the installation of the water meter. Now the master meter is for the handheld, it's so that they can read the meters, and that's an annual fee. So the MMI one is just Daniel, but the master meter is split 75-25 between Storm Haven and Daniel, just like we're splitting everything. There was a little bit more sampling that was charged that I think is, we'll get more tests back next month, but I checked again with Chemtech Ford and it was just their regular tests. So we'll probably see those increased tests next month.
Okay. Thanks, Kim.
Yes, I call for a motion.
So Barry?
I'll make a motion to approve the warrants as specified.
Okay.
Second.
Okay. Call for a vote.
Devin, yes.
Corey, yes.
Dixon, yes.
Pearson, yes.
Okay. Let's go to agenda item number 12, approval of meeting minutes for September 11th.
Reviewing the documents from the FBO, I would prefer that not read that way. I'm not sure that I said it that way, but maybe I did. Could I say, Councilmember Duggar stated that after reviewing the documents from Heber City regarding the FBO?
From Heber City regarding?
Mm-hmm, the FBO.
Sure.
That Mike Duggan had resigned from the airport advisory board. So just do that.
So put airport advisory board?
Mm-hmm. Please.
Sure.
Thank you.
Okay. Go ahead and call for a motion.
I'll move to approve the minutes with the recommended changes.
I'll second that.
Okay. Call for a vote.
Duggan, yes.
Kohler, yes.
Dixon, yes.
Pearson, yes.
Okay. I'll, I don't think we have any closed session tonight, so I'll call
I move to adjourn.
Call for a motion.
Okay. I'll second that.
Call for a vote.
Devin, yes.
Kohler, yes.
Dixon, yes.
Thank you, guys.
You can keep that if you
Thanks,
want.
Thanks, everybody.